Welcome to the Hour of Lateral Thinking, heard weekly from New York City. I'm Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer.
The displaced playwright. As always, we will be joined by Chris Cerf, co-author with Henry Beard of Spinglish, an Encyclopedia Paranoica, and on his own A Skunk in My Bunk, compulsive writer and songsmith David Finkel, Maggie Paley, author of More Than Just the Book of the Penis, and audio engineer and musical perpetrator Bob Auld, to discuss generosity. Ah, yes, I'm throwing truffles all around the room. Welcome to this Hour of Lateral Thinking. Eat some chocolate, honeys. I don't know if that's generous or cruel.
Poisonous. Yeah.
Or poisonous. I'm wondering, everybody, you know, the sense of what's generous generally comes to you. You notice it. You don't know that maybe your parents are giving something that belongs to you to somebody else, but there you do get a sense of that there's a certain way that your parents behave that's acceptable and that you grow to admire. Is there any memory? I'll ask you, David Dozer, first. What you considered something generous in either or both of your parents? You can include your sister in this if there's anything generous about her. But that, you know, that caused you to take note and repeat it perhaps in your later life.
Yes. Well, I guess I'm not allowed to say no. But anyway, let's see. I sort of thought it was generous of them when they invented this idea that once I was going to the first grade, I was going to receive 35 cents a week allowance. And I don't think I even heard that. I didn't know that kids got allowances. And they explained it to me that you're getting a nickel a day, 7 days. And this nickel could get you a candy bar or a Coca-Cola or anything else that cost a nickel. Or you could wait 2 days and then buy something for 10 cents, like a balsa wood airplane, a glider. They cost a dime at the 5 and 10. But I think I became victimized by this generosity of this 35 cents, and I decided by the fourth grade that I had to live on 35 cents a week, and that was my budget. And my mother's birthday was approaching, and I think it was the first time I ever occurred to me that I should give her a present. And I went to the 5 and 10, and I bought her a plastic funnel that cost 15 cents, and I wrapped it up, and I gave it to her for her birthday, and they looked at me like, goodbye, Charlie. This kid has totally lost it. No, they were nice about it. But then I realized, this is not a good gift. This is not generous. This is, like, stingy. So I went on from there to do worse, I hate to say.
And, you can tell them about
sixth
it.
Grade,
what did you give
well,
me?
Well, I'm just going to briefly tell you that in the sixth grade, every kid in the room was supposed to give a dollar to buy the teacher a present. And I said, I get 35 cents a week. I can't give the teacher a dollar. And all the kids were horrified. And they said to me, ask your parents, they'll give you the dollar. Oh, no. I live on 35 cents a week. I can't ask my parents for extra money. And then they decide, well, what are we going to do? We're going to give the teacher a gift. It says, from all the kids in the classroom except David. They thought, no, we can't do that. And anyway, I don't remember how it resolved. I don't think I ever gave the dollar. They just decided, okay, from the class, and they only got a dollar from every
kid. And what did the key teacher give you as a grade?
The teacher loved me. I don't know why.
Okay.
Well, she didn't know that I was the only one that didn't have a dollar. But she thought I was just the best student she ever had. She told the other kids, this kid is running circles around you, you bunch of losers, which made me very popular with them, in addition to the fact that I would not give the dollar.
You were cheap.
But anyway, that was how I never became generous.
I should have heard that story when you gave me that first birthday present that you ever gave me.
Oh, see that? Yes. Now, I'm glad you mentioned that almost. I'm glad.
It's very,
yeah.
It comes something like a funnel. In fact, you once gave me a hamburger press for some occasion.
No,
but
that might
I think
be true also.
I think the first, very first thing was a package of, I'd say they were pure linen, but they were men's handkerchiefs.
Yes, well, they were available at Village Cigar on my way to your birthday party.
For 35 cents, probably.
Probably 35 cents for a packet. Yes, of men's handkerchiefs, yes.
He never,
where are they?
That's what he learned, basically, that 35-cent rule.
Right.
That's what he learned about generosity.
It's trapped me my whole life, yeah.
So, Chris Cerf, do you have a better memory than that of generosity?
Well, my memories are mostly more general. My dad made a business philosophy, really, of being generous. He was a really generous, warm guy anyway, but he always talked and gave me the lesson, too, to not try for the absolute best deal you could probably get. He always said, leave the other person thinking that they got more than they might have. And that was his philosophy all the way through life, and it's helped me, too.
Yeah,
because there's plenty for you, and if the other person is happy with the deal, you're going to end up working together great. Henry Beard was that way. Henry is generous to a fault. I mean, he would give credit to people saying that they wrote things that he wrote. I've never understood why he did that, but he always did. I do have a story on the other side of that. My mom was generous with one of my things once. And in a really funny way, Frank Sinatra loved electric trains, and he came to visit while I was away at college, and he admired my electric train set. So my mom gave it to him. And she said, well, you don't need it anymore, which was true, but I never have quite gotten over that act of generosity.
Do you have any sightings of Frank Sinatra with your train set?
No, it disappeared forever.
You didn't go visit Frank to see whether he set it up.
I didn't get too many invitations on my own to go visit Frank. No.
But it worked for your mother. I wonder what.
Yeah, he loved her.
He loved her.
Glad I could help. Well, not so glad, actually.
Right. Kept everything intact in the family. That would be a hard one. I could give Frank Sinatra anything. Couldn't everybody here?
No, I mean, I had outgrown my trains, but I sort of thought I would put them in my apartment running around the ceiling.
Oh, yes.
Remember, P.J. Moriarty's restaurant in New York used to have electric trains that ran all around the top of the walls. And I often thought it would be fun to do that with my old electric train set, but I didn't have it anymore.
Oh, damn. You know, if Frank Sinatra realized that it was a kid's train set, I bet he'd have sent you one for Christmas. He was known to be wildly generous.
Oh, usually so.
Especially.
Do you think he thought it was an adult's train set?
No, it's just, why couldn't he have it? And he was generous to me, actually. I remember I was having dinner with my friend Sonia Manzano, Maria from Sesame Street, and Frank Sinatra walked into the restaurant, and he invited us over to join him and bought us dinner. Sonia was just blown away. I mean, you know, I had met him before, but she had no idea that I knew him, and he didn't have to do that. It was great.
Where was this place that you had dinner?
At Patsy's, actually.
Oh, at Patsy's.
Which he used to love.
His regular job.
I didn't go there because he was going to be there.
Well, and then
surprise.
And no electric trains were running around at Patsy's either. At least I think they got safekeeping. David Finkel, how do you address this issue?
I address the issue. Well, in several ways. I'll start by saying that I've always been generous to myself, but it's taken me a long time to be generous to others. And one of the earliest examples that I should be generous to others, and I abided by it, was another case of a parent decided to give something away of mine. It was a Christmas, I would say probably about 1948 or 49, and we celebrated Christmas and Hanukkah. So our Christmas Hanukkah gifts, we were opening them, and my mother said she had run into Mrs. Swales from down the street. And Mrs. Swales had three children, Billy, Bobby, and Patty Swales. And Mrs. Swales said that they didn't have enough money to give their children any Christmas gifts. And my mother was very upset about that and said, would you mind, and my brother as well, giving your Christmas gifts to the Swales children? My brother and I said, we wouldn't mind at all, although in my, maybe not my heart of hearts, but in my heart, I wasn't that thrilled to be giving them away, but we did it. And And when I've never regretted that. I've always thought, well, I did a nice thing. I was generous, but I wouldn't have been if my mother had been behind it. So I grew up being, and maybe that was the cause of why in the future, from that day on, I was very generous to myself. I've become more generous as I get older. But and my father judged people. My father was I think I probably said on this program before, was a doctor in Trenton, New Jersey, and he was generous to the point that he wouldn't charge a lot of money for his patients when a lot of the other doctors he knew, and which were all our family friends, were doing that. And he judged other doctors by how charitable they were. I always admired my father. I still admire my father, and I miss him. But I didn't learn enough from him about being charitable, which surprises me somehow. I guess I'm just. I guess the word that has already been used, and that was a very commonplace word in my childhood, was the word stingy. Mm-hmm. And I think mm-hmm. I may have been somewhat stingy through my life, which I regret now that I have to talk about it.
You have to talk about it. Here's the thing.
Yeah,
it's come up for you, and now
the subject of generosity came up, and I have to be honest.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about us, all of us on this show, is we're always honest about ourselves, and in my case, to a fault.
To a fault. It's the truth. Stingy Dave, as a child.
Yeah, just call me Stingy Dave.
Stingy Dave. Okay. And the other guys are fairly stingy, too. The other Dave.
Well, Stingy Thrifty. Thrifty Stingy Dave.
Okay. However you like to say it.
I guess you could look at it from the other angle that you're being thrifty. But I don't know. In my case, that's a cop-out. Thrifty I was being. But then again... I was brought up, maybe some of us here were, with parents who went through the Depression.
Right.
And we all learned that you had to be thrifty because you never knew when the rug was going to be pulled out from under you.
Right. So, yeah. When you'd be on the Apple line and you'd want to have that set of electric trains with you so you could trade it for an apple. So, Maggie, how about, I remember your father as being... quite generous in a work way, of treating younger people as if they were worthy of a job or something like that, or a tip, something. But what do you remember as a family trait?
Well, I think, first of all, he really liked your writing, so he was very good to you about your writing because he liked it.
Oh.
And I guess he liked my writing, too, because he was good to me about my writing. As an editor, he welcomed people in and he could make what they wrote better by working on it. And he liked doing that, too. I've noticed lately, maybe because of the subject of this podcast, but I've noticed that when I thank people, it makes a difference. When I thank somebody for doing something for me, they notice and they say, I hope you have a really terrific day.
In exchange for being thanked, you get a whole day. That's pretty good, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
It sure is.
Well, there you have it. That reminds me that my father also is very generous with his intellectual support, I'd say. I remember him reading, being generous with as a reader of people's material, but also being generous about their creative potential. And all my cousins always commented on it to me after my father was gone, how much his support meant. Also, now my mother was different. She was also supportive of people's creativity, But she had this shop that I've told you about so many times, the gift shop that had seconds in it so that you could be both cheap and generous. You could give someone a gift and it wouldn't cost you too much. And all of my cousins, too, still remind me, oh, your mother in that store, I'd go in there and she'd say, here, you got to have this. I still have that platter, teapot, you know, rug, whatever. You know, she didn't have rugs, but that pitcher, whatever. And it still remains a prize. But I think I have a very conflicted, like David, very conflicted over how stingy I think I really am at the core. How much I feel deprived of something. And I think that came up in last week's discussion of bargains, that I wanted more of these bargains. Even though I had enough bargains, I had enough of everything, I still wanted more. But anyway, more on stinginess another time. This is generosity, and it is time for someone very generous. Here she is now. That was Billie Holiday with Lester Young on the trumpet. You know, she was the most generous singer there was. She taught everybody how to sing. Billie Holiday, don't you think?
Yes.
Musicians have a generosity about them, is that they like to share their music and play and give. They don't hide. Does anyone know a stingy musician? Bob, I'll defer to you. You probably know more musicians.
Well, they're the stingy band leaders.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Have you worked for anybody? Cab Calloway didn't pay his sidemen, right?
He said Lionel Hampton didn't pay his sidemen.
Oh, okay.
So well, and sometimes you can find a band leader who's both. Benny Goodman was known for being stingy in tipping and in paying his bandmen's salaries and whatnot, and yet on the other hand, he secretly did very many generous things. So, but because he could be an irritating person as a band leader, we tend to remember the stingy stories.
Right, stingy stories. I guess they just
certainly if you're at the other end of them, I would.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
But it's weird that he would do those generous things in secret.
Well, that's the way to be generous, really, isn't it? Yeah. Not to have to claim it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Not have to claim it.
He was quoted by Russ, what's his name, the guy who wrote BG on the record, as saying, if it became known that I did generous things, everybody would have their hand out. He was afraid of that.
Yeah.
Which, given that he was one of the most famous people of his time, is not unreasonable.
Well, let's get. Fortunately, Frank Sinatra came into this story early, since he was known so famously as paying people's hospital bills, but without claiming it. Right? I mean, isn't that David Dozer? You have always told me that the way to give is anonymously.
Yeah, I mean, it's for your own protection too, because everyone will want something, and you'll be inundated. Yeah. But I wanted to set up like a foundation, like John Beresford Tipton, $1 million. But I wanted to call it like some other name like that, and then be able to hand out grants to people who need the money. But I don't want to hear about, I don't want to be endlessly thanked and also opened up to, So
wasn't it Michael Anthony on that show handed out the checks for John Beresford Tipton?
Yes.
You could have been Michael Anthony. Yeah.
I could do that. I could be the Michael Anthony guy. I can't tell you who the millionaire is,
that's right.
Yeah, I guess.
Because I had no intention of giving out $1 million because I don't have $1 million. But I thought maybe it'd be nice to give people $1,000 if they needed it without them knowing you gave it to them. Just let them think they got a genius award or something.
Now, that would mean you'd have to do it that way in your lifetime. You could will them the money and then.
Oh, well, that.
But you wouldn't know about it.
Well, that's not the point. The point is some people need the money and they don't need to know who where it's from.
That's true. Has anyone ever been surprised? Usually this happens earlier in life when people sort of respond to you. You're some kind of like a puppy or a kitten, and people respond and help you along in life. They give you breaks or nice things, or I don't know about money, but give you some kind of encouragement. Yeah. And do you remember those people, who they were, and how mysterious it seemed at the time that they gave you something?
Yeah, I certainly do. My uncle had a friend named Glenn Bowles, and Glenn had an immense effect on my life in two ways. He helped me learn to play the piano. When I was a tiny kid, he was the one, when my uncle and he would come over, he would play, sit at the piano and show me how to do little things. And I doubt I would have ever played the piano later if it weren't for that. Mm. And he also taught me how to find constellations in the sky, which has led to immense pleasure for me through my life, chasing eclipses. Like just the other day, we had a partial eclipse that I went over to the East River to see. And those are all things I wouldn't have enjoyed without this one guy who was nice to a kid much younger than he was.
How much older was he?
Well, he was probably in his 30s or 40s when I was six, you know.
Oh, well, that was a lovely thing, and lovely to remember. Both things. I mean, how could you forget?
How could I forget, right?
To remember. So anybody else have that early sense of being...
Well, in my life, I would say I was very aware of many people, maybe a list too long to run through, who were generous with their time. And I think that's a great way to be generous. And maybe to some extent, I've tried to pay that forward by being generous with my time and as a substitute with generous with my bank account. But nonetheless, I think it's a great form of generosity to help teach people, explain things to them. I had an uncle, my uncle Mo Block, who just had no end of time for me. And he had a busy real estate business. And yet whenever I wanted to learn from him or have something explained to me, he would just stop what he was doing and explain it or tell me or fill me in. I just, I think maybe I have learned how to do that in a way. Be generous with my time wallet collects.
Yeah, while your wallet collects dust. Dusty wallet. My father was generous that way too. And I mean, here's a mixed blessing. My father was a chess champion and very competitive. He told me in his later life that he had sort of lost his lust to win, and he felt that he wasn't so interested in conquering his opponent anymore. But when I was 2 years old, he taught me how to set up the chessboard and how to make the moves. Huh. The only thing that was very generous of him, and I never forgot how to do that, he wouldn't let me win, though. He couldn't do it. I don't know what got into him. I don't think he let anyone win. One Thanksgiving he came here and he took on, it was about a dozen guests. He beat them all. And he did not hold back. Yeah. I think it was afterwards he decided he'd lost his competitive streak. Anyway, I'm sorry, Nat Maggie, you were going to say something. What was it?
I was going to say that my mother gave me piano lessons for nothing.
She didn't charge.
How many mothers charge their kids for piano lessons?
Well, she did charge. She went upstairs one flight and charged the people up there.
Well, that's different.
Yes, I guess you're right. So she shouldn't have charged me.
I mean, actors, I have noticed as a group of people, are ordinarily, when working, very generous. I remember we used to, in L.A., we would go twice a week, I think, play improvise at the Improv in L.A. And we had a kind of large group of people. Sometimes they worked, sometimes they didn't. But everybody would come to the workshop when not working, and it was amazing how many were frequently out of work, but that's the life. And Paul Benedict was one of the players. Do you remember him from, what's that, the Jeffersons, I think was his most famous. He was in a million things, but that was when he came to real attention. And he played the neighbor, the white neighbor of the black Jeffersons. He was a really, really smart guy. And he was working. He was on a TV show. So money, I imagine, was pouring in. Well, to go to lunch, to have Paul Benedict come to your workshop meant everybody was going to be drunk at lunch, because he was going to buy the best wine. And he would keep the refills coming. It was a kind of interesting thing. Not, I mean, there were other actors in the group that... They had a lot of money, but it wasn't working money. You know what I mean? It wasn't like this extra money.
Life savings they had. Yeah.
They had life.
They may never work again.
That's right.
When you're talking about actors who were generous, I have to think of Danny Thomas, who started St. Jude's Hospital.
Yeah.
And what a generous thing that is. Nobody pays. Yeah. Marlo now spends so much of her time raising money for that. And that's a helping kids get over cancer who could never afford to otherwise.
So that is amazing.
It's amazingly generous.
Yeah.
You know, on their commercials, it's stated that no child ever pays anything, and no parent has to pay.
Not even for
and
traveling.
I know that Danny set it up in Memphis, Tennessee, because he thought that the hospital would be even more needed in that area than in California or New York, you know, where...
Yeah.
Which were more familiar to him. So
that was smart.
Great thing.
Yeah, that was great.
Could we make a distinction between public generosity, like what we were just talking about, and someone who's just personally generous with someone? It's frequently romantic. And that, of course, is a song intro.
Oh, yeah? Okay, someone else who's really generous to someone else. Fabulous. Up on Cripple Creek, that's the band. Up on Cripple Creek. Well,
what a happy record that is.
Isn't that a happy
record? It makes me smile every time I hear it.
Yeah.
And you know, it's also a very generous record.
Yeah.
I think there are two kinds of performers, and maybe the larger kind is the kind that they're talented and they just want to be generous with their talents. Of course, they're making a certain amount of money, but you can't be sure. And then there are other performers who are basically sold on themselves, and what they want to do is get you to notice how great they are and congratulate them and appreciate them on that, applaud them on that basis. But I really prefer generous performers. And the band, they were just, I remember the first time on that album, when I first heard their first album, Music from Big Pink, I was beside myself.
Yeah. Well, in what way were they? What was the generosity of the music itself? I mean, that's
the music
generous
is just so,
to start with.
Is so happy and giving, and maybe I'm making this up, but it's the way I guess it's the way I perceive it.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Did you ever go up and see Levon Helm's Midnight Rambles that he had up in Woodstock at his house?
Were you at them?
Yeah, you could go.
You could just go, right.
Anyone could go if you had to buy a ticket in advance, that's all. And I went up a couple of times. My friend Larry Campbell actually was in his band, so that's one reason I even knew about him. But, that was such a delight. And talk about generosity. They would play for hours. They would play requests.
Well,
it was just wonderful.
Also terribly generous, maybe the most generous, is Bruce Springsteen. He'll play for hours and hours.
Well, is that generous or is that keeping people?
I think it's because he loves to play and his audience and he wants to give them of himself.
How many intermissions in his 9 hours? By the way, he's doing it again. He's coming back to Broadway.
He's coming back to Broadway, and the price is very high. That's not so generous. I didn't go up to the Levon Helm, but I was interviewing Joe Cocker at the Capitol Theater upstate for Show Magazine, he was, unlike many performers, he was happy to talk to me before the performance. So I'm interviewing him before the performance, and then it's about to start, and he said, "Come on stage with us." So I did. So I was, for that night, I was one of the Mad Dogs and Englishmen, singing with Joe Cocker. And I thought that was awfully generous of him because it made me feel great.
Yeah. And it's like Pete Seeger had that sort of generosity, too. I mean, where not only did he share his music, but he almost insisted that everybody in the audience sing too, and that he not be the dominant voice, which of course he always was, because he was the best singer and the best player. But everybody began to feel that they too could sing. They could sing in a foreign language. They could sing, you know, in a group. They could, and that was a very impressive thing for me as a young person and as a person, he was totally generous too. If you said you had a cause or whatever, and you needed him to be the front person, the brave person, you know, the anti-war person or the anti-something person, he'd show up there with his banjo. He'd, you know, I remember once we were recording the article, Dennis Kucinich's Articles of Impeachment at WBAI. We thought we would have it all join, and everybody had an article of impeachment to read. And Pete Seeger, he must have been 87 or 8 at the time, and he came. He said, okay, I'll show up. And he showed up like on foot. He had taken the bus or the bus down from Beacon, New York, and then he got on a subway or whatever it was and came down to Wall Street to the station, lugging his banjo, and not only, you know, read his article of impeachment, but then went on to sing whatever you wanted him to sing, and also tell you everything that every other article of impeachment that of every other president. That's how sort of knowledgeable he was about potential loss of democracy. Imagine how we could use him now.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
I want to mention Eric Clapton. Because I mean, he was just, I don't even know what it was that he did, but I know that he was just the most generous person. He just
How do you know that if you don't know what he did?
Because of the way he performed.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
He was just so giving in the way that he performed that I loved him.
You know, while we were listening to Cripple Creek, it flashed through my mind that Carly Simon was one of the most, not only was she generous and just singing whenever she wanted to, but she'd also take off whatever she was wearing around her neck and give it to you. And she actually gave you a locket at our wedding. I mean, I don't know whether I should be so pleased with that sort of generosity.
My mother was not thrilled, as I recall.
Your mother wasn't. But no. It's in my jewelry
box.
But
she was very generous, it's true. I mean, she is a very generous person.
She just couldn't. There are
I think
some
her
people.
Mother was a bit tougher than Carly, as I recall.
Yeah. It might not be appropriate for some other very attractive, tall woman to put a necklace around my neck on the day I married Janet. But she was a close friend of ours. But
not that close, really.
No, I guess
she
not.
She never knew. But she was very generous that way, too, as I remember. Yeah. Many boyfriends.
I suppose all of us are familiar with the saying about you never can tell how much is going to be accomplished when no one person insists on taking credit for it. And I think that's kind of a generous way when you're working with something and you come up with an idea and everybody or somebody else does and you all agree on it, but nobody says, well, that was my idea.
Right.
So it's just that people contribute, and that's contributions are in that way are generosity. That's generosity.
That's a great part of collaboration, isn't it? The generosity of people. Yeah. I'm wondering, what about coupling? You know, so many of these love songs about love are about I don't have anything, but I've got love, and of course, Cripple Creek proves that's not a bad thing to have a person who can't give you anything but love, and you know. Fix you when you're broken. Let's see. Some of us are married here, not all. The ones who are, let's talk about, you have to give up something to be a couple. You have to have some equality, and some, you know, not always even and everything. Do you have anything you've gained from being a couple? Chris, I'll ask you first, since it is, I don't want to hear it from David exactly yet.
Well, I've been lucky, you know, very, very lucky. And I love being married to Catherine. She's a writer. I hope I support her in that way. She supports me in everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we're both writers, that's been hard for us with other people sometimes. Because if somebody isn't creative and doesn't value the other person's creative time, that can be really a problem, you know. And we both really understand that. But and we've learned how to really be together in other parts of the day and to support each other. I don't have much to say other than because it's so good, really.
Yeah, yeah. Now, okay, David, I'll give you a chance to...
What?
You guys can have a fight right here on the radio.
No, I have to say that it's kind of remarkable. We've been together so many years and worked together so many years and also worked separately. And we can just, you know, sit in the same room. And I was thinking about this, how many tables we've sat across from each other, with or without talking or with or without writing or letting the other person do whatever. It's kind of... amazing. I couldn't have envisioned that really as marriage, you know? How about you?
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, you see, I grew up with a girl who was 2 years younger than me, and so I'm kind of used to the idea that the other person there is a woman 2 years younger than me. And you grew up as a single kid. You didn't have a sibling. So I think it's amazing that you can tolerate being with me. For me, it's like the briar patch I was born in, you know? I'm used to it. I like it. In fact, I couldn't live alone. I mean, I need the other person there. I don't like to write all. I mean, I can write by myself, but I much prefer when we write together, and it's fun. I don't have that much fun writing on my own, but, you know. So there.
Okay, so
a great, big, generous compliment to my wife.
Thank you.
Well, collaboration.
You're my briar patch. Yeah, that's it.
No, collaboration really is a form of generosity anyway. And that's certainly the way I like to write. And Sesame Street and the National Lampoon were both very creative collaborations. Right. Sesame was more friendly. Lampoon was more of a rivalry in some cases.
Yeah. Well, how about the single people? Let's hear before we move on to another topic. How do you defend yourself? How have you? No, I'm just kidding. In a mean way, in an ungenerous way. How do you? Is it part of stinginess to be single, or is it a youthful? I don't know. I mean, I don't know anything about being single anymore. I was only single for a few years, really.
Well, I've had great romances in my life,
mm-hmm.
And I've been sad when they have been over, but I persevere. I think that because of my childhood, I was never able to marry because my parents were so angry at each other so much of the time. And I don't know. So here I am. And I certainly during this pandemic, I was very sad to be alone.
Mm-hmm. What else can I say? No, that was really the biggest reward of all, really, was to be with somebody that you could be locked up with for a year.
That's right.
For a year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
David, do you want to talk about this, or is it too testy a topic?
Which David are you asking?
David Finkel.
sure. I'm happy to talk about it. I'm in a way, I'm married and single in a strange way. I mean, married is the main thing, but David and I live on separate sides of the city. We see each other a lot and talk to each other, and David is extremely giving. I don't think I'm nearly as generous towards him as he is towards me. He might have a different attitude, but My guess is he doesn't, because he just is very generous and very caring. And I care as well, but I'm not sure I show it as much now that I'm on the spot to talk about it. But I certainly have a generous spouse.
A generous spouse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he must like it too.
Now, I think he does like it, or he would have done something about it by now. But maybe he's just waiting.
No, I couldn't say. Now,
I'm waiting to cue in the next song.
Are you?
Because otherwise, yeah, we'll run
well,
out of time.
We don't want to do that because this is also about giving.
Oh, it's a fabulous song.
It's a fabulous song. Yeah. Ella Fitzgerald imitating Louis Armstrong. I can't give you anything but love. What's the expression? Janet, imitation is the highest form of generosity. What?
Janet, could I point out that in that, she also imitates Rose Murphy.
Chi-chi, little la-la-la-la. Thought she was imitating herself.
It's nearly forgotten now, and she shouldn't be.
You've been listening to the Hour of Lateral Thinking on this show. You heard us with Chris Cerf, David Finkel, and Maggie Paley discuss generosity.
This program originates from 5 neighborhoods in New York.
In one of them, our audio engineer and musical perpetrator is Bob Auld, with special thanks to Billie Holiday and Lester Young, the band, and Ella Fitzgerald and her imitation of Louis Armstrong. You can reach us at catradiocafe@gmail.com or on Facebook or Twitter at Cat Radio Cafe. I'm Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer.
The displaced playwright.
This has been a production of Cat Radio Cafe,
the feline's favorite radio empire.
And remember our slogan.
Cats can be generous. Once a cat has eaten all it wants, you can have a bite, especially if you are a giraffe.